5:36 on November 17th, 2025, calling to order the Transportation Sustainability Committee special meeting of the City of Emeryville. Can we do a roll call?
Yeah. Chair Matt Solomon?
Here.
Vice Chair Dimmore?
Here. All right. We'll take public comment. I see no members of the public in the room. Were there any online comment cards?
There's no online comment cards.
Okay. Closing public comment, general public comment. First item is approval of the October 14th, 2025 regular meeting action minutes.
I move approval.
I'll second.
Okay. And motion. Edson?
Aye.
Dimmore?
Aye.
Motion passes.
I see no action items on the agenda, so moving to information items, which will start with Sustainable Streetscapes project update with Ryan and Bill.
All right. Yes, jump in. Okay, so wanted to give an update on our 2024 project, which is under construction, literally right outside. So we are doing the paving this week. We are paving on Hollis Street at each intersection this week, weather dependent. The live news off the press about an hour ago, 2 hours ago, we have a little bit of weather hiccup on Wednesday night that we're still monitoring, so it could change. But our plan was to do each intersection every night, so we're going to start right here at Park in 23 minutes. So we'll be doing deep lifts at each intersection where we're going to do pretty much like a full pavement section. So we're going to go deep grinds and then redo the pavement section anywhere from 8 to 12 inches, depending on where it is. So we're going to be reconforming basically the ADA pass through the intersection. So there's new ProWag guidelines to get less than 5% slopes going across the intersection. So these new curb ramps that we built out, they're all for new ProWag guidance, and we have new grades that are at the intersection set. So we're conforming and kind of flattening out the intersections, if you will. So we had to really lower a lot of areas, and then in some areas we had to raise it a little bit. So depending on where we were, that's what's going on. So that's why Hollis Street, as we did the curb ramps, you see a lot of areas where there's a kind of a lifted section, and we have that kind of a steep drop off during construction. That's all going to get fixed here this week. So that's what's going on. So we're going to be doing these deep grinds. They're going to repave the intersection to be flush and then go to the next intersection each night. They're going to do Park Avenue tonight, Tuesday night, tomorrow. They're going to move to 45th. Bill, actually, you last talked to someone on the phone and I was in a few meetings. Maybe you can do a little bit more on that.
Wednesday night, as Ryan mentioned, we're expecting some rain, so you probably won't be doing any work Wednesday. Thursday night will be Powell intersection, and they expect to do some work during the day as well to try to maximize their production there. There's a dead lane currently on the Powell Street section, or there will be that day as part of the traffic control. So they'll be paving that as well during the day. And then the night work, of course, that we have some work. And then the Friday night, they'll move to 53rd intersection. And you may be asking, what about Stanford? Well, there is no deep lift at Stanford. The grading worked out that they didn't have to do a deep lift there. So no matter what needed there.
And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, they're anticipating to do all the block segments in between the 2-inch mill and fills. So weather depending on all this, they're hoping to still try to get done by Thanksgiving, but if we're canceled on Wednesday night, this might push us to one day on the Monday after Thanksgiving of one more paving day to kind of wrap up activities. And that's the latest info. So depending on how weather shapes up on Wednesday, we'll probably do some updates on the public website for our latest schedule to everyone and kind of just keep everyone abreast of the schedule and everything like that. So, we're at will of the weather a little bit on that, but we're trying to get as much done as possible just to kind of get out of everyone's hair on this and kind of get it back in the best shape as possible, as quick as possible. So that's the update on the paving side of things. On the budget side of things on the project, we have encountered quite a bit on Hollis Street. So it's an urban environment. You know, it is an older street. It's one of our older streets in the city. So a lot of frontages that are right up against the built out, you know, street frontage. There's a lot of old telephone vaults that have been put out there by, you know, AT&T, old telecoms that we've encountered out there as we're, you know, doing different concrete improvements, different items out there. So as we have done items out there, we've encountered a lot of shallow conduits, a lot of shallow utilities. And then as we have done different concrete items and to get certain grades at different areas, we've had to increase what we were doing there. So we've had to increase our paving limits to a certain degree to where we have triggered MRP requirements, which Matt will get into later today. To where we triggered green infrastructure requirements on this project. This required us to do a little bit more than we anticipated for the green infrastructure in the project. We have done green infrastructure planters along a lot of Hollis Street. So you'll see, you go out there today, you'll see these long strips. These are deep planters that are, some of them are, you know, 150 feet long. They ended up being about 3 to 4 feet deep in many sections. These will treat the, you know, that first runoff from a storm, and they will, you know, treat that, the Matt will go much better detail of this, but they're to treat that, you know, the dirty water coming off the streets and treat that before it gets into our storm drain systems, it goes out to the bay. And, the cost of that is a lot. So, we had an anticipated budget for that. We had a contingency budget on this project. So going into this project, we did have a fairly large, what we thought on this project, you know, 25% contingency budget. We have, between the shallow utility conflicts that we've had and the green infrastructure requirements, have kind of gotten to that budget limit on the project. So
you also had a sinkhole that you had to deal with during the course of construction.
So doing a little bit of high level of all the unforeseen conditions. So there's utility conflicts of the shallow items. There's been a sinkhole that developed at 53rd Street near a Alameda County Flood Control culvert that was there. So the sinkhole developed and we had to fix it on the fly. That ended up being, you know, a couple $100,000 to fix it. It wasn't something that we could leave. You know, once we encountered it, it was right at the intersection of 53rd and Hollis, and it was any big truck going over it, it could have been a failure any day. So we, stuff like that is items that we've encountered on Hollis Street. So with that, our budget is near our contract capacity with Bay City's paving and grading. Anticipated going for another amendment on the contract to add capacity to the contract. And we have navigated that through our council, or not our city council, sorry, our general council, like our city attorney. We are no longer going to be adding new work to our project, and we are going to kind of be rebidding work instead. We are not going to add more work to our current contract. So at this time, we are going to be shifting the original scope that we're trying to do as part of the 2024 project and move it into our 2026 project. And that is our current game plan. So what that means is we have a current design project that's underway with the Adeline project, which we've had in the works. We've have 65% design plan with Adeline Street. We are going to be shifting the already baked plans for some of the items from the 2024 project, which includes Doyle Street, Halleck Street, and a few other streets that we're kind of lingering around that we'd like to do. And I'll get into this on the graphics here. And we'll be shifting them into the 2026 project. So that is our current game plan of where we're at in our sustainable streetscapes project. So, yeah. And but with that, let's see, any other points I want to make? So with that, overall, our sustainable streetscapes project and program is working well for the city. We just had a report that came out from NTC talking. So what they do is compile all the PCI levels, the pavement condition index of all the cities in the Bay Area. We are at a three-year moving average of 78, which it, we are tied for first in Alameda County, tied with Dublin, was it, I think? So we're pretty good in where we can have some freedom to kind of do the streets that we want to do, you know, and, you know, try to hit some of the streets that are ATP wish list streets, stuff like that. And so I want to get into a little bit of that. So what we shared in the packet was kind of where we're at. And so here we are right here. Emeryville and Dublin tied at 78. Let's see. This is just kind of just showing kind of where year-to-year pavement conditions of local roadways for other cities and roadways. But what we really want to get into is what our city's doing. So this is our overall PCI condition from our 2024 report. We had a company go out. This is a biannual. So every 2 years we have a company go out and through MTC, there's a grant given to the city to do these reports. They go out, survey our whole city, and do a pavement condition index of all our local roadways. So in this, they give a category to each of our streets. They give a rating from 0 to 100. This is basically the PCI range. They give a color index like this of category 1 through 4. And the 1 through 4 rating is really where we do different treatments. So anything in green is something that we can consider to do a slurry seal, is if we're touching that street and trying to do a slurry seal. So we're touching the street in anywhere in like a 3 to 5 year range. Anything in the blue is probably in that 5 to 7 year range. And with slurry seal, maybe a 2-inch mill and fill. A yellow is something that we do need to do a grind and mill and fill. So something maybe 2-inch to 4-inch mill and fill, and something in orange is 4 inches and plus of grind and pave, or a full replacement when it gets to that orange range. So in Emeryville overall, we don't have a lot of these yellows and oranges. So just picking out in the map, you can kind of just see, you know, we don't have a lot, don't want to move these, a lot of yellows, you know. So Adeline is one of those that has a little bit of yellow. That's why we've had it on our target list to do in our next project. There's a little bit of yellow here on Peralta Street as it connects to Emory. There's a little bit around on Holden Street, but we're holding off on that because there's a few developments in the works that I think we can condition to maybe do. Halleck Street here is one that we do want to do, is an orange one. There's a few side streets that are yellows that we'd like to take care of. All the blue on this map, just a reminder of the key, is the 2026 project, what we'd like to add in. So what we've added into the 2026 project is all these side streets along Adeline Street, near the Adeline Street project. We'd like to add in Peralta, right near Big Daddy's Garden. The little Watt Street, Emory Street right here as well. It just makes sense to do this whole area. Do Halleck Street. We'd like to, and this is one of the big things, is due to the contract capacity of the 2024 project, we do need to move Doyle Street into this new phase of the 2026 project. So Doyle Street would be moving into the 2026 project. And then there's a big yellow and orange area up on 67th Street where we have a lot of potholes and stuff like that. And with this project now having a lot of yellows and oranges and, you know, in this poor and good range, this project, which we thought we would be doing a slurry seal on Adeline Street, does turn into likely a paving project. So I think we would now have the, you know, economy of scale to have enough paving to make it worthwhile to do a paving project here instead of a slurry project. So we do feel maybe like a 2-inch mill and fill on Adeline Street is appropriate. That would probably be 20% more expensive than a slurry seal on Adeline Street. Would probably be about that cost estimate on that.
What does it do to the lifetime of the pavement?
But the lifetime of the pavement, so slurry seal will be 3 to 5 years before we have to come back to it. Paving it would probably be 5 to 7, and in reality, 7 to 10, you know, even more than some of these, you know. So, you know, but best practice would be come back 5 to 7, but true fashion, 7 to 10, you'd be fine.
And as a side note, many jurisdictions don't repave their streets, usually sometimes 30-year cycles.
So, looking forward, the one last street that is pushed from the 2024 project is the parking lot of Hong Kong East Ocean. There's some flooding issues that we like to take care of at the same time out there. That's a city owned parking lot that we'd like to pave as well. Okay. And then, so moving forward 1 year past that, we're looking ahead at our 2027 list of projects. We have two streets that are yellow on this list that are that good region on the map. So they're kind of in that 70 range of the good area. So they're about to get into that fair zone. So they are actually probably more of a mill and fill, not a slurry. But we might be able to get away with like a type 2 slurry where we might micro mill and then do a slurry or do something like that. So it's a long lasting slurry. So there's a few like in between options with these paving slurry in between options. And that's something likely that we might explore here. And so Christie Avenue might be a good candidate for the 2027 project and something that we're looking at. And then 53rd Street by ECCL and 54th Street over by Boyer are a few candidates to do. And looking ahead beyond that, we didn't put it on the map, but likely it would be all of the streets up in the Vallejo, Doyle Street area up here. All the local streets that are probably due for their next slurry. It was about 5 years cycle from the last slurry that they got.
If you can summarize for us the streets that were on the 2024 Sustainable Streetscapes Project, and is getting transferred to the 2026.
Yeah, so that would be Doyle Street, Halleck Street, the Point Emery parking lot. Oh, and sorry, I didn't mention this was Point Emery and the Hong Kong East Ocean. So Point Emery I didn't mention earlier. Sorry, I
blinked. A few questions.
Yeah.
Since while we're on it.
Yeah.
The streets you just mentioned, they're on 2024, and then they're moving it, and here we are in 2025. Does that mean moving to 2026 means they get done in 2027? I guess how do we translate that into like outcomes?
It's really just
like the year is a name plus the time frame of the work.
Yeah, it's the name of the project and just really just a project name that goes through council. It's not necessarily like a mechanism.
And the streets that are getting bumped because of the cost overruns, they were going to be done as part of this year, right?
This year's project.
But then we hit these issues, the sinkhole, which obviously has to be addressed. What was the other one? The conduit boxes.
Shallow conduits.
Yeah. So the sinkhole you said was $200,000. What was the total cost of the conduit boxes? What's the dollar sum of all of those three buckets of issues that we ran into?
It's been over $1.5 million in overages.
And $1.5 million would have been the cost of these projects that are getting bumped?
Yeah, beyond that, actually. So, Doyle Street on its own, $675,000, I think, was the cost estimate. The parking lot area was $300,000. Point Emery was $250,000 or so.
Is there a reason why? Remind me, what was the scope of the Doyle Street one? What I'm getting at is I'm just wondering, you know, I understand the need for trade-offs. Right? And actually, maybe before we get too far along there, you said we triggered some additional infrastructure installation. What, could you explain that a bit more? What did we run into? And then why? What did that trigger? And is that like a real requirement? Is that a self-imposed requirement? Is that state requirement? Like, well, you know, are we being smart about this, right? Are we just taking on additional costs and bumping things that could be, you know, more valuable to the community?
Yeah. So, Matt, can you touch on this in your presentation a little bit?
I don't dive into the details, but in short summary is it's a real requirement. It's a state-imposed requirement.
Yeah, so it's a state-imposed requirement.
State water board that is then promulgated through the regional water quality board, and it's in the regulations.
There's daily penalties if you do not apply. But
potentially,
But there is, it would be self-reporting, right? There's not like an agency going around.
No, that's fine. It's a state requirement.
Yeah.
Okay, but then we triggered that unavoidably through just unknown project site conditions, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And what was the dollar sum associated with that bucket?
So that, I might need to get back to you, so I don't want to.
Anyways, it sums up to the $1.5 million.
And actually, that sorry, just to clarify, because these are big numbers. I don't want to like
misstate them. Yeah, no, that's fine.
1.5 for the unforeseen conditions, might not including the green infrastructure. So
Not including
the infrastructure. Yeah. The green infrastructure on its own was, we had the staff report that had that in there, if you recall. I can pull it up, or Phil can get it. $2 million?
Yeah, so
I think
$2 million by itself.
By itself, yes.
What is the total project size?
Total project size at this point, let's see.
And the top contract capacity is 9.8.
Yeah, 9.8.
Yeah. So and that's sudden, what we're heading against.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we triggered like a 20% single issue that just added 20% to the project.
Beyond that.
We had budgeted for a lot of this, but it was more than we had foreseen.
Yeah, we had contingency, but obviously, you know, contingency doesn't cover some contingencies. Okay, so but it, because of the sum of money, that's why we bumped these. But it's not like we could say, pick the Doyle Street, and we couldn't pursue like one of these, right? We had to get rid of all three of them or push them all.
Yeah,
it was the number that would keep us within our 9.8.
I see.
That's essentially we picked the streets out of the project that would maintain us within our ceiling.
Okay. Maybe a separate scope, which is maybe not even part of this, but I know we were talking about a handful of speed bumps on Doyle. Are those?
We're still trying to keep the speed bumps within along the greenway within the project.
Yeah.
Okay. And then one last question on the cost and logistics. So there was obviously a bunch of unforeseen things, right? Depleted all of our contingency. We're making some hard decisions here in the infrastructure that serves the community. We had a conversation, it sounds like, with John Kennedy's office, and what was the nature of that? I guess, so why was this a legal question and not like a city manager question?
It was about the original proposed project scope that was bid out, and that ensuring that the project stays within its scope. It doesn't extend too far out of that originally stated scope.
So the legal conversation was around, can we do all these contingency things that popped up under the original project scope?
And then just the whether or not we had the leeway to significantly increase our current project dollar amount significantly beyond the ceiling that we had. And the advice that we got was to stay within that ceiling. and not go back to council. So that's what we're doing. We're staying our ceiling. We're moving these items to the next project and bidding them out.
I see. And that was a guidance from the city manager's office or from the city
attorney? I think it was both.
Yes. To come back to council would have meant, what, 2.5 million or 2, 3 million? I guess we don't either. A large sum.
It would have been a significant increase in the contract amount.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's all helpful background narrative, right? To understand we have to make fast decisions and hard choices, right? So this is helpful. Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for pausing for questions.
And as a side note, it is labor 2024. The triangle area was completed in 2024. The Hollis project was still under design while we were under construction, and we had capacity for it, had planned for it. So once that project was done and we finished the design for Hollis, then we were able to then transition, and that put us into the following year.
In a way, it's 2025 project, just
yeah. It's kind of 2 years in one.
Shell Mount
as well. Yeah, that was a big one. So it's been a lot done on this contract.
One last, just as a side question, just about the Doyle Street project. That doesn't continue on towards Powell. That's a separate leg.
It does not, no. Yeah, it makes a 90 at 59th and connects to the Greenway right against
Campbell. Oh, and it addresses our improvised crosswalk.
Yes. There.
Is that the one?
Okay. We keep the design crossing at the intersection for safety reasons.
I understand that. Okay, all right, that's helpful, thanks.
Are you done?
And then 2027 project, these three streets, and that's it.
Okay, so maybe one question that I have, so Adeline, you said, is in 65% approximate design. Doyle Street is already designed. Those are, not major design. I mean, obviously not, no work required, but not as big projects. 67th Street, I don't know. I guess maybe my question is, it sounds like for 2026, hopefully we'll be in a position where it's, we have a bunch of stuff that can get to paving more quickly.
Yeah, we foresee a lot of these, like especially these side streets, Halleck. The parking lot is actually, these two are fully designed. 67th Street is, these are easier ones to design. There's not a lot of work of the striping or what the scope is.
And just as a side note on that, when we're changing street configurations to meet ATP plan goals, that's what takes up the time. When you're just repaving, it's fairly simple.
Also, if I can add one more thing, the green infrastructure requirement only kicks in when it's 1 acre of contiguous pavement down to a certain level or more. So any of the small projects aren't going to trigger that. So it's basically 40th Street, Hollis are the only two projects that we're looking at these green infrastructure costs for. So that's not a concern in the other ones we've been talking about.
And specifically on Hollis, it was the regrading of the intersections that took us over that threshold, not just the repaving specifically.
If we want to learn more about that, is that going to come from Matt's presentation, or would that be like just to really understand that regrading, the trigger, the regrading, the requirement, and obviously the background to my question is if this was a say this would have sunk the project, right? Some cities can't simply do this, right? Like, what would happen if it wasn't done, right? Like, as a thought exercise, is it going to be suddenly a flooded street? Is it unusable? Is nobody going to know because it's kind of an oddly applied requirement in this instance. Like, I'm just coming at this with no information and just questions.
I think that would probably be best saved for Matt's.
That's my interpretation.
Might be best saved for a whole other presentation. I mean, you have a couple hundred page document to go through if you want.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe a high level just on that before we leave it then is, like, I guess, you know, this is a capable team. Was the requirement kind of, like, was this at all a gray area? Were things challenged? Were we kind of thinking about alternatives here? Like
100%, yes.
Okay.
So the high level on this is our project was in the transit areas, triggered a lot of this requirement. So we had to make it fully proactive compliant in the transit, you know, bus stop areas. So the whole pad where we're doing the concrete bus pad, the whole transit island area, all the ADA slopes coming in and out of that area and all the ramps of that area. That domino effect came into the intersection areas and it required regrading of all their intersection areas all throughout Hollis Street. So that, in effect, triggered a lot of requirements. And there was a lot of analysis went into what was contiguous, what was not, and we came down to the whole project was contiguous, and that was the key distinction. So, yeah, it was a fun exercise.
it comes down to the project without green infrastructure looks like what you would expect, concrete and drainage inlets, and the project with green infrastructure looks like these large bathtubs essentially that you build upstream of a drainage inlet that then takes all the water, filters it, and then takes the remaining after it's been filtered and brings it into the storm drain system, which is essentially an unfunded state mandate.
Yeah.
Something that's actually been litigated. And so it's complex, and Matt's presentation will take us through some of it. It's got many chapters.
Yeah. So it's like $2+ million, and we don't necessarily, like, to somebody, a user of these systems, it's a better experience, worse experience, the same, like, would anybody know it? I guess
they will see greenery as part of the streetscape as opposed to concrete and asphalt. From a layman's perspective, I think that's the aesthetic enhancement. I think there's an argument to be made about the quality of life for people, but then the quality of the water that's going into the bay is dramatically improved as a result. And that's essentially where the policy background for the requirement is coming from. Clean water into the bay and then the overall health of the bay ecosystem.
Because you have like kind of oil and debris that...
Hydrocarbons from our vehicles are the main source, you know, and it's not insignificant. And this does make a big difference. And, you know, it used to happen organically through being in a rural setting, but then as we become urbanized, everything that falls is collected, concentrated, mm-hmm. and then essentially brought to the bay. So,
One final question, and then move on. But so just to the labeling of the project. So anything in 2027 won't happen next year. Is that
not necessarily, because it's all, you know, with Hollis that was under design when we were in construction with the rest of what we had, which was significant, Shell Mound and the Triangle, right? In this case, everything essentially is going to be designed when we bid it.
Right. So I'm thinking like could say Christie, for example, is. That's a big stretch. And I know that it's been an ATP study, listed as a study street in the ATP. So is that something that, like, in theory, we could start a design on that sooner? Or is that's going to happen? The capacity of the team is at a point where that's...
I would say for Christie Street, that's a question to be determined. Right now, our energy in terms of ATP studies is on Powell, right? And we're trying to get that through. So that at a certain point, if it's either eligible for grant funding or able to self-fund it, it could happen at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. Christie Street, I am not very confident that we have the capacity to do the planning work necessary to study what can be done with that street at this point. Yeah. Because I think part of this is that we've been, I mean, look at the map. The city's covered with projects, right?
Wow.
And I think what we have to do is do our best to right size the amount that we get done to the capacity that we have.
Well, yeah. That's what I was interpreting the
we'll see.
College curve.
Okay. And this is somewhat, as you know, us coming here for the conversation with you is a demonstration of the flexibility of the process. And because the process is flexible, we've been able to get this much done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today.
Thank you. That's all. David, any other questions?
Maybe just one more. I think it is interesting that Christie is that yellow under the green?
Yeah, sorry if the colors were poor choices, especially on the screen.
Well, the color superimposed on color.
Yeah, but yes, that's yellow underneath. I could pull from the report to get the exact number, but yeah, I think it's in the mid-70s.
Is what's driving the 2027 slot for, say, Christie, is it primarily like the road quality?
It would degrade into the 60s by the time we're touching it, probably, is the reason.
So interesting. Like I ride my bike and drive on there, and it never struck me as a particularly bad street, but I also ride on a lot of Oakland streets that are just, I don't even know if our scale accounts for those.
Yeah. So streets in the 70s, yellow and orange in Oakland would be good.
Okay. You know, well, I'm getting to the relativeness of it, yeah. Right? Yes. And there's a... And kind of the underlying question there is, like, you know, come 2027, like, if we feel like, well, this is not really worth simply repaving without some additional, you know, design, like, could that be bumped to 2028, 2029, right? 2030. Yeah. I don't think we should be insistent, like, oh, we've hit 61 or 59, and that should trigger like some automatic repaving. We should, you know, kind of do a sensibility check to say, like, is this really a good use of limited resources? You know, we're always making decisions. We're always looking at those trade-offs. So that should apply to street paving as well. Where I mean, my guess here is I think. Many of the streets, even those that we call fair or low end of fair in Emeryville, are actually quite good. And it would be a shame to spend or waste money when we kind of look for these nice opportunities to kind of bring in some redesign elements. And I just want to encourage that sort of thinking, which I think you guys were already doing. But I, you know, at least don't expect from this council member, you know, an insistence that, like, my goodness, it's poor due to the scale. You must drop everything and repave it. You know, I think we should be the same flexibility and nimbleness we apply to all these other projects and contingencies we should apply to this. So I it should be a work in progress, not something in stone.
And that's that's exactly the point of meetings like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
So this is definitely a tentative list. This is not our set in stone list.
It's meant to be a dynamic plan that we continually bring to this committee for discussion.
That's really helpful to see it like this and to get a sense of what, you know, a few years down the road could be happening and could be a risk. So awesome. No other questions? Open public comment. If there's anyone in the room No comment cards.
No comment cards. All right.
Discussion.
I just have additional discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I do have one more question. What is the next decision point for?
Yeah. So 2026 project, we are going to be adding the scope of these blue circles into our designers' hands. We've already assigned a lot of this to them. Some of the other streets are new. So some of the Emery Peraltas are new. So we're looking to target early next year, like January, February, to finalize our bid package and bid this thing out. So as that's coming together, we'll probably be previewing some of this with you guys and going over that. So there will probably be like a February update with you. And so decision points then.
Definitely before we go out to bid.
And then
I guess in terms of budget, if there's a few million dollars of stuff that wasn't in the 2024 package, I assume that will increase the cost 2026.
So that's, we have some other closed out projects where we're going to be moving some funds around. I think I mentioned that at the last October TSC. Right. As part of whatever council item it is for this project, we'll be moving those funds around into this project.
So we think that we have sufficient funding to cover 2026.
Yeah, so there'll be some 25-26 funds and then 26-27 funds for this project.
Funding's not our constraint. The existing funding on the books is enough to get this work done.
Yeah.
Just a matter of the packaging.
And then, so when I said 26-27 funds, that would be July 1st, that trigger of next year. Some of those funds hitting this project.
Okay, sounds good. If no other comments, we can move along to the next item where we're going to solve all the problems that we just talked about. MRP, item 6.2, MRP 3.0, navigating the new stormwater permit requirements. Maybe you will start by telling us what MRP is.
All right. MRP 3.0, Municipal Regional Stormwater Permit, the third iteration of it. We already got into some of the problems, so I'll get into there a little bit later, but thank you for joining me today. It's been a little while coming. I tried this presentation once and my partner fell asleep after like slide 3, so I'm going to try and give you a high overview, keep it there, but we'll dive in wherever you want to, just let me know. So really briefly, talk about some of the background here, some of the regulatory history, how we got where we are, the specific thing that we're under, and then looking ahead to what is coming on the horizon. And just to start off, I want to talk about what we're doing here and why we care about stormwater. Not something people think about too often, but it's really important. It's shaped a lot of this city. It's a very highly regulated resource because it has a lot of impacts. Specifically for the city, there's a lot of staff time that goes into this. It's a major part of our CIP. There's potential fines associated with non-compliance. We have a large industrial legacy in the city. Our groundwater has a lot of potential contaminants in it. And in redevelopment era and beyond, the kind of the shape of the city was really affected by the guidelines that were part of that stormwater green infrastructure guidelines that were developed early on. And last but not least, also it's really important for the safety and livability of residents here, which brings me to the next slide of, it's really, you don't think about it until you do, and then it's really big deal. So my goal is to not ever, you know, hopefully no one's ever thinking about this, but just want to bring it to light today so you know there's people in the background working on it. This was back in 2010, 2011, over Vallejo 61st, I think. But we don't have flooding events like this, at least in recent history, and hopefully we won't again. But the, you know, climates are shifting, things are still happening. And so it's good to be prepared. going to give you just a brief regulatory history. I'm not going to go through all of this, but the short kind of summary is from the 1970s, wastewater has been regulated, and then stormwater, and it's been ratcheting down from large urban areas to regional, three iterations of the municipal regional stormwater permit that we're under. So we're under the third one. 2021 is when this version became active, and it has become increasingly stringent. And the background photo here is of the Cuyahoga River burning from pollutants that have been dumped in it for the 13th time, I think. And those industrial like key moments that helped spark the EPA and the original one. So like I mentioned, it's very highly regulated, and it touches on a lot of different aspects in the city. Our city operations, it touches on public spaces, how we manage our trash, what our trash receptacles look like. Whenever any new development is built, it goes through stormwater regulation review, how construction happens in the rainy season. And now this iteration, there's actually requirements on existing private properties that we're having to navigate, which is a whole other level of complexity. And as I mentioned, there are potential fines for non-compliance. So that's always something you have to keep in the back of my house. So there's 22 sections to the regulations. I'm just going to highlight a few of the fun ones that we'll talk about today. But if you have any questions or want to talk about more, just let me know. The big one that we already talked about is C3. So that is essentially the vegetative treating of runoff from new developments to treat it before it goes into the stormwater. And that's from private projects or from public CIPs or public developments like a corporation yard. And as a quick phrase, remember, disconnect the downspout. So you're making sure that you always flow to vegetated surfaces. And then there's a couple other specific requirements in there where cities have to hit actually minimum acreage targets of treated area beyond just like whatever's happening in their city. And the MRP is like 260 pages long, so there's a lot of detail in there. Just saying, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer the specific questions you had earlier, but they're, like I mentioned, what triggered this was that it's 1 acre of contiguous work where it goes down to base, and I think that was is unlikely to happen on other projects here in the city.
Except for 40th Street.
Except for 40th Street, right, which is planned for, and we've already been in discussions about what that's going to look like. And
go ahead. I was just going to say part of the part of how Emeryville is special when it comes to this type of infrastructure is our groundwater table.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Actually, two things. First of all, we have a very high groundwater table. So as Mohammed mentioned earlier, normally green infrastructure, so it will slowly percolate into the ground. But here we have to build bathtubs and then direct it back into the storm sewer, because if we get the more water we have percolating to the ground in large events, the more likely it is to mobilize all the contaminants we have underneath in our groundwater and move them back towards the bay. So we have a kind of different system, and then also potentially flooding is another risk there with the contaminants in the soil and the high water table. And then one other item I wanted to mention was that we, in regulatory history in 2002, the EPA came in and gave us a notice of violation for our stormwater practices. So we have been on their naughty list before, but my predecessor, Peter Schultz-Allen, actually helped develop the urban guidelines for dense urban greening. And that's a model that's been used nationally kind of as a case example for how to actually incorporate green infrastructure into cities that are developing, which is pretty cool that Emeryville is a leader in that and an example in that. So here's just a few examples from around town. If you're ever interested, I'm happy to do a green infrastructure tour, because there's a lot of really, really cool stuff going on. including some green roofs I actually didn't even know about until I got deep into this this world, and glass houses, as you see. But really, once you start looking for it, it's everywhere. Even ECCL, if you were walking by, they had little podium planters there on San Pablo today, green infrastructure as well. So that's C3. There's also C4 and C6, which touches on commercial and industrial. And here, work on existing commercial industrial so they don't pollute any further, and then also construction activities. And that is a series of different requirements, but largely it's via inspections and making sure that these contractors and construction groups have regular skill kits and best management practices in place when they start their projects.
I just have a clarifying question.
Yes.
Are we talking, I'm kind of getting mixed up about the handling the capacity of the stormwater versus like the clarity of the stormwater. Is this all about pollutant reduction, or are we also increasing the capacity of our ability to accommodate large amounts of stormwater? Like if you go back to the previous slide, like this, I guess that bathtub on Hollis or whatever, mm-hmm. like what's going on in that picture, the left-hand, top left picture?
Yeah, so you hit on it perfectly. It's both. Here it's not actually filled up as much as it will be, I don't believe, because there's still plants to be planted here and a little bit more soil, if I'm correct, Phil. But there will be a gap. If you've been to public market, you've seen those planter strips with the metal, and then there's a big kind of gap down 18 inches or more where that it holds the water. So for large rain events, it also doesn't, flush through our system. Like it reduces the load on our system at any given point.
Because it's like taking longer, I guess.
Essentially, yes. You're using the element of time to distribute the entering water entering the bay.
You're slowing that.
Okay, yeah, I got it. So you have, and as a result, you end up with more capacity. And also, other benefits are it reduces erosion in the ecosystem. Because you're not concentrating all this flow from concrete pipes.
Yeah, lots of fun benefits.
I see. Okay, so you're not overwhelming something. It's kind of a slow buildup. And then in like an alternate universe, like is that where all that soil is? Would that have been usable to like would people have like walked on that or what would that have looked at?
Would have been curb and gutter, probably. We wouldn't have widened there. It probably would have been the same sidewalk.
Okay, so we're getting plants. Or are you saying people would have been able to walk there?
No, it would have been just curb and gutter on the right edge, right there.
So it would be pavement.
Yeah.
It would be roadway pavement that would have been collecting hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
Got it. So more road, essentially.
Yeah. Now it's less road. But it's maintaining lane capacity. Because essentially we had extra space along Hollis that we could neither wasn't enough for us to do
for the bike
lane. Yeah,
for the bike lane.
Yes.
So that's probably where I would have ridden my bike.
All right.
You probably still can. It's just would be a little bumpy.
I need a mountain bike.
Exactly.
We can build a track up over that. Get back to you on that one.
Okay, thanks. That helps.
Yeah, and feel free to interrupt if you have any other questions. So photos here from an inspection we did. Like these are, there's equipment, industrial equipment left outside, and then rain flows through, and you're getting various chemicals and things just going straight into storm. As I mentioned before, if there's construction, making sure there's not significant sediment going down into the drain. But moving through quickly, a really large item that wrapped up recently is trash load reduction. It's been ratcheting up, and I'll talk more about that on the next slide, but we recently hit the 100% reduction of trash into the bay, which is, clappable. 100% is a lot. So a grain of salt there. But it... by the water board standards, we have installed enough pipe screens in our stormwater inlets, which you can see on the top left and right, where there's that trash being kind of stopped before it enters the system, and then they come with a vector truck that's a crew below, and they come and suck it all out. And that's a clean system on the right. And then there's also, we do visual inspections, there's street sweeping schedules, and then I mentioned before, private land drainage areas, where there's the storm drain inlet on the private parcel, and they're not required to have appropriate measures, either trash capture-like devices or sweeping, some sort of cleaning, various, I guess, different things they can do, and we're working on how to implement that fully, but we have started an inspection program for that to make sure.
So they are required to install those, or they are not?
They're not currently required to install them, but they are required to they're required to have a clean, I guess, entrance to their inlet. So they have an inspection of their inlet area, and if there's significant trash debris or things like that accumulated, then they'll go on an inspection program, essentially. And we have yet to determine kind of what the final step of that will be. Gotcha. But our goal is to work with property owners, not,
Is that like someone's house? Or this is like a big building?
Typically, well, right now it's only properties that are 10,000 square feet or larger. So it's only large properties, yeah. And typically private homes don't have entrances straight to the storm sewer system. So not too large of an issue, but you'll see if you're interested in an example, again, public market, if you go in the back parking lot, you can look down kind of where the Tesla chargers are. And if you look down in the storm grates there, you'll see a little bag essentially for trash to stop the trash. So fun place to check out. But a note here is that this is one of the requirements that has been ratcheting up, which also ratchets up the city's requirement to do ongoing maintenance. So to Mohammed's point, unfunded mandate, and it is one that continues to accumulate costs for the city.
And we've been grant funded, as a side note, to do the HDS project.
Mm-hmm.
That captures a large amount. It's like kind of a central point within the sewer, the storm drain system. And that's actually served us very well. And then the remaining 13, was it, or 11? What was the number?
13.
Yeah, 13 screens that were installed at specific inlets has brought us up to meet that goal in order to thank Matt for that work.
And we have to send a truck to go clean, suck out those screens. This is trash that would have gone to the bay, but now it's new workload for city staff to clear the screens. And if we don't clear the screens, then you get rainwater buildup and flooding risk. What's the frequency, the maintenance frequency of that task?
They do it at least twice a year minimum, but I think potentially more depending on certain
areas. Or the season that goes up.
Yeah.
Do we contract that out, or do we do it ourselves?
All in house.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to give crew a huge shout out. They have limited resources, and they do an excellent job.
What's the accumulation of that picture on the left?
I don't know how long that was in that particular instance.
But that would be blocked, right? I mean, that would flood.
So the point is that it's catching it and still allowing water to go through it. It basically places it to the side, so to speak.
Okay, but in a big storm, that might cause an issue.
Depending on how clogged up it gets.
So I don't know if you can see my mouse, but there's an overflow, essentially. So it is still potentially able to clog, especially if the trash floats. But if there's a large rain event.
Oh, I see. But then you might get the trash that then just goes out. So we're saying, like, if it comes to flooding the city or the trash going out like it used to years back, we'll err on the side of city trash flowing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But we'll try to keep it cleaned, and maybe I guess we could see the frequency by which it accumulates.
Yeah. And to our crew's credit, they know the hot spots.
Right.
They know the regular spots to go to. They know where they know the city like the back of their head.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's probably different in different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And this is like of the minutiae we have to report to the water board. We report how frequently we clean them, how full like they were on average, like very detailed reports about like these type of things. It's a lot of data that they ask.
And so, part of this is you know, it's tied in partially to the Hollis project, but that's max time tracking all of that information, putting it together, entering it to specific reports, report formats, and then of course the engineer's time to put in the original infrastructure in the first place, and then the maintenance crew's time to keep it maintained. So it's a significant part of our work, and it's often unseen, which is the purpose of this, kind of daylighting it.
All right. Well, this is just the timeline. It started in 2009, trash flow reduction with the first MRP, and now we hit 100% from those kind of original conditions. So that was the exciting note here.
And then the side note, and this is really about giving Matt credit here, but if you notice, it says with offset credit, and then you see a point where it says no offset credit. So the calculation or accounting mechanisms have become stricter and stricter over time. So meeting that 100% means that it's a bigger achievement.
It's true. Yeah. Thanks. So C11 and C through C13 are chapters on specific pollutants. There's mercury, PCBs, and copper, and various controls for each. Largely, they're more on the planning and like control side ahead of time. But when there's new development, different regulations trigger. If there's a house being demoed between certain years, we set up a system where that'll trigger something in our planning, where they'll then have to take a second look at it, and they'll pump it up to me, and I'll make sure that they do the appropriate tests for PCBs. And then there's various planning requirements for not having architectural copper, things like that. And then there are going to be some targeted testing for some of these contaminants, potential future remediation. Although that's probably going to be MRP4 more. And the best parts are the reporting parts, which is the last three sections, actually. So there's a new requirement in this MRP3 where we inventory assess and, create a plan to inventory assess and make a replacement schedule for all of our structure. We have to track and report all of the costs associated with the requirements, which is great. And then that annual report that we do, which ends up being more than 500 pages every year, which thankfully we have a regional group that does about 400 pages of it, but it's still me doing, 100 pages of minutia. They ask for some pretty detailed things that take quite a while to collect. So
give me an example of a minutia.
I mean, like I said, the percentage filled, the percentage of the connector pipe screens that are more than 50% capacity during the first clean out of the CSIF, or total acreage that was conducted for a visual assessment in 2025 versus 2024, the change thereof, and why.
So the fact that that cartoon looks somewhat like you, except I've never seen it with its eye. Purely coincidental.
Yes, okay, we made it through this presentation. Here's a 6-story rubber duck just to cleanse your brain. Hong Kong, 2023. It's a great time.
That's going to come to the bay.
I think if you maybe put in a letter as a council member, that might be possible. To go to Maryland, actually. So, like I mentioned before, this third iteration of the municipal regional stormwater permit is 2021 to 2027. And the negotiations for the fourth iteration have already begun. Kicked off last month, just kind of initial meeting. And we're, as cities, really trying to keep any changes to a minimum and just streamline things. And what the water board is looking at in terms of changes, we haven't gotten to full discussions yet. That will, I'm sure, be coming to council whenever things get promulgated, but that's years still. Likely there will be some cleanup and some changes in streetscapes, that the issue of green infrastructure in public right-of-way, We're not the only ones who have come up against that. That's been noted as a concern in other cities. The asset management plan and climate change adaptation, it's planning at this point. We anticipate them putting more requirements for implementation in the future. And as I mentioned before, the ongoing costs, the maintenance increases in both the trash, and then we have new green infrastructure installations as a city, like in the courtyard or in various buildings or the public right of way that we're responsible for. That is just continued escalation of costs. So that's the fun future of stormwater. And I'm happy to talk about any questions, but also I hope you have a little bit more happiness when you're dancing in the rain next time. Mm-hmm. Think about where that rain goes. So happy to chat. If there's anything else.
Who are the negotiations? Says the State Water Board, who else is sitting at the table there?
Yeah, it's the Regional Water Quality Board, the state, and a lot of the jurisdictions, but the there's a regional group called the Alameda County Clean Water Program. Mm-hmm. They're kind of leading we internally as stormwater managers, that is our advocacy group. There's ACCWP and BASMA, the Bay Area Stormwater Management Association. Those are the two large groups that are kind of, we discuss internally what's important for the cities, and they are the ones that bring these issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. Going back to the Hollis Street, you said it was simply the size of the project that triggered the MRP, the acreage. How did we come upon that? I guess somebody was calculating the square footage. Did we get that right? Was it close? Was somebody out there with like a tape measure to be like, maybe this isn't part of the project? Maybe the project, was this project originally conceived in different segments and we're doing it together, out of, convenience of timing and contract efficiency? I'm trying to.
Yeah. So the project originally was mill and fill, 4-inch mill and fill all the way through.
Which would not trigger.
Okay.
It's the depth.
Yeah. Yeah. And which did not go to the base, which that's what triggers it. When you go all the way down to the base, any portion of the project.
So if any portion goes to the base, then the next question is the overall project an acre or more? Is that like the logic that's
dealing with? Some of the logic, yeah. And then what got us to getting to the base was us now doing the full transit PROAG compliant bus stop areas. And the PROAG compliance triggered this year, or it might have been last year, actually. I the timeline.
Basically, ADA-related grade requirements.
Yeah. And that.
So once you move the surface of your sidewalk, move that grade, that then the ripple effect of moving that grade goes into the roadway, then the amount of the roadway triggers the depth. Then you multiply that by the acreage, and then you enter into Matt's world.
Yeah, I feel like this should be a case study for governance in California, right? Like it's a bunch of independently created regulations that then through some cascade put cities in a very difficult position.
100%.
Because it's not clear to me that we really gained a lot for the value, for that $2+ million, what are we gaining? We already have a fairly green infrastructure. So like the point is not to add some additional plants, it's to add this storm capture stormwater treatment, which honestly it's nice to have, right? Like as far as if you were to grade Emeryville without that on how we're doing relative to other cities, guessing we're pretty excellent, overall. I mean, just we're already 100% on blocking the trash is phenomenal, right? So it's just kind of a very unfortunate and difficult position that we were put in a very hard to predict cascade of regulations and events. And that's what's like really kind of blowing me away here.
For what it's worth, if you'd agreed us on a curve, you go to our neighboring jurisdictions, you go anywhere, any place that deals with these issues, it's just a tax that ends up being added to when you do transformational work to a roadway. Once you if you're keeping the roadway and the basic dynamics the same, you're fine, okay? But once you start transforming it and trying to hit those big safety, ped, transit goals, and especially bike goals, right? And in a way that's transformational, then the costs just start escalating.
Is that because you're by necessity moving?
It's the third dimension. When you look at something on a 2D plan set, makes sense. But then once you start throwing in the 3D angles, that everything, then you and the necessity to keep the roadway draining, right? Then you need to move things. Once you move things, you're taking 2, 4, 6, 8 inches of depth, depending on where you're going, and you're multiplying that across thousands of square feet, and then this triggers that.
And 40th Street will be having the same issue. We have bus stops, bus pads, same ProAg requirements, but we're accounting for it. So we have green infrastructure. We have better spots to put green infrastructure on that. So Hall Street also had the tricky issue of not having great spots to put it too. We can necessarily put it on the side streets. There was no room, wasn't a good candidate for it too. We had to put it on Hall Street. And Hall Street had shallow utilities, had shallow water table. So we were up against it on this one. So yeah,
Not only that, it wasn't just the green infrastructure. It was the combination of the green infrastructure, the utilities, and the sinkhole. So all these things accumulating together. And then we had our contingency, and it just wasn't enough. So we're accounting for the contingency by moving the project south.
But like you said, this requirement really dwarfs the sinkhole even.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So, and it's the other point you made where like another city, you know, I guess either maybe with a deal. Well, they simply wouldn't build in these improvements because it's easier to maintain the status quo, right? They would rather not do all the things that we've done because then they trigger these new requirements. So you end up with kind of this unintended consequence.
I was just going to say that it's essentially a good intention policy with an unintended consequence that has become a barrier to making our streets increase the cost to improving the safety of our streets for our most vulnerable users.
Something to think about.
Yeah. Any other questions on this? Or I guess any other questions that you want to discuss now? You can get a lot of questions.
No, that's fine. Thank you, Matt.
Excellent. Any public comment on the room?
No public comment.
Well, thank you, Matt. This was interesting and helpful. Not boring at all. Any comments?
If you show the presentation to anyone else, there was a typo on assess, the word assess. There's an unfortunate typo.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's fine.
So he wasn't bored.
Yeah.
Excellent. Paying full attention. Awesome. Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. With that, I'm going to close item 6.2 and move on to 6.3. Back to Matt.
Yeah. Programs update. All right. Matt Fest. It's been a while since I've been here, so some updates. The AVA e-bike rebate program is still going on through September 2026. Rebates are going strong. Ebates are also going strong. And we happy to report we have, I believe, the third highest percentage by population in terms of applicants for the program. So please continue sharing that message. And it's great to hear it's been well received by the community and there's been a lot of uptake, which is great. Three new bike share stations have been installed recently over at Uchin Park, Powell Street, Bavin Drive, and then Vallejo and 66 up by the Greenway. I believe the Powell Street one still has to be energized, but I believe the other two are at this point. Spooky Streets happened on Halloween. That went well. I know Felice went out there. I'm not sure if you had a chance to visit.
My kids went by with my wife, or one of them, and I had another kid who just had too much candy.
As happens on Halloween. There's interest in the Clean Cities program that we run, which is a program where we lend out trash grabbers and cleanup tools to community residents and groups who want to hold their own events. And that we've received multiple kind of requests for that recently, which is really exciting. Violet's going to present at the Parks and Rec Committee tomorrow or Wednesday to tell them more about the opportunities that are there. So I'm excited to see our community really, you know, getting more involved. And the tree project broke out ground, which is also very exciting. 30 people came out, and we're excited to be moving forward on that. I'm anticipating January for when we're going to have that wrapped up. At least currently, that's the target date. One exciting kind of cool piece is a biochar is going to be one of the amendments that we're adding there, which is not a typical bit. Combination with compost does a lot to ameliorate soils, give it a lot of structure, and really help trees grow well. So excited to see how that goes. Our herbivorous is very excited about it as well. And I think that's all I've got for right.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. What's biochar?
It's similar to charcoal. It's where you get like a woody material and you get a like non-oxygenated environment and you put it through and you heat it essentially.
Does it kind of look like those blackened like wood chips that you see on like kind of homes, like newer homes? Like the yard, it's like a green yard material.
No, I'm not familiar with that, but I would imagine
lawn alternative. Sorry, it's
like those mulch.
Yeah, like instead of seeing like wood chips or gravel, you might see like kind of like a blackened. Anyways, I'll look it up. It sounds interesting.
It is, and it's actually a interesting answer for carbon sequestration. Tool, I'm happy to talk more about it.
Yeah, I like the idea of the and then the neighborhood, like people who want to like go on walks can like pick up trash on behalf of the city.
Yeah.
Looking forward to learning about that.
Well, no,
when my wife was pregnant, she would just go on walks and pick up the trash, and people would like say thank you to her. And it was like a really interesting experience, and I'm thinking we're building this like walkable city, encourage people to go out and beautify the city, and then that's like, you know, we're getting also it's kind of like a win-win-win for the city and people.
Would the bucket grabbers be picked up here, or they be like
the current system is to have them at the courtyard and then we organize with groups who want to come do it. But it's a work in progress. A short preview of what it's going to be. Well, right now it's set up so we meet community groups, and we've done this with a lot of businesses in the area. They do it as brief like team building events. That's a popular thing, but also just to clean up the area in front of the business. But we'll just meet them at the courtyard. However, we did get an additional large shipment of trash grabbers, so we're excited to try and figure out a way to kind of maybe be able to do that more individual or at least a smaller group basis. At some point, hoping to have recreation may have a volunteer coordinator. I'm not privy to what's going on there, but if they do at some point, they might also be part of that program and organizing it. So hoping that'll get off the ground.
Sounds great.
Excellent. Any update on the compost bins?
Yes. Unfortunately, right after we discussed, we went and talked to stock waste staff as well about their recommendations, and they had generally had success with the green ones that we've used before. And when we went back to check the prices, they everything but the green bands had increased by, what was it, 10 to 15%, at least, if not more, in the span of, you know, a week or two.
Wow.
And so so because we were had a locked-in price for those green pails, we decided to purchase an order of those, which we actually received today. Oh, Friday. Great. Came in on Friday. So they're in the courtyard, and we'll be starting to distribute them.
Oh, great. Okay. No other questions. All open for public comments.
Don't
see them. Any other comments? Closing on 6.3. Thank you, Matt. Moving on to 6.4, capital improvement program tracking spreadsheet.
So I will go through the ones that are updated on here. So our courtyard maintenance yard relocation project, heard through the grapevine, they did some paving out there on Gordon Street today. I think that went well. Didn't hear any hiccups there. So that is going on. That site remediation is going well. Beyond that, our bridge maintenance program, we're talking about how to incorporate that into sustainable streetscapes, getting some of the budget in that moved into sustainable. So we're working on the bridges at the same time. I think we'll also be working on the 4th Street Bridge as we do the 4th Street project. So we'll be doing the handling the maintenance of the bridge at the same time as the 4th Street project. Let's see. Billy, you want to give a sustainable streetscapes update?
Sure. Ryan pretty much covered most of it, as you can hear from the sounds outside. They've started their work at the park intersection with the grinding. We just got sent a text from the contractor, the grinder working, so that's good. The rain's falling out. Cross your fingers, everybody. So that work starts tonight, and recently they finished the work at the Powell Hollis Plaza, so it looks pretty good out there, except for the planting. They're going to plant later, put the landscaping in later when they landscape the rest of the project. So that looks pretty good out there. The art piece that's going to go where the egg beater, or the, sorry, the wind spire used to be, that's going to get installed this week. Tomorrow they're going to pour some concrete for the base, and then Thursday the artist is going to put in the actual piece itself. That's the tentative schedule, weather permitting, of course. Paving is going on for the next couple of weeks, as Rand mentioned, and then following after that, you know, we still do plan on doing the speed humps that, you know, we've been talking about at the Greenway, as well as the benches at the marina, and the solar powered bus stop lighting at the viable stop location. So this is a big chunk of the project that's going on outside, but there's still a little bit more after that that let me get done with this project.
You still have that extra bench for the kids park on Doyle Hollis?
Yes, we do.
Great.
And then as far as the paving goes, just for phasing, so they're going to pave it. There'll be temporary floppies throughout the corridor. So that'll be the temporary condition until we get the final striking down. They need kind of a clear weather window. So usually it's like 3 to 5 days of clear weather to dry out. And then we can do the final striping. So it'll be sometime in December when we get a clear window, and then we'll get the striping in. But that will also be night work that we want to do the striping, so it's the safest time to do that as well.
Side note,
yeah.
I know I've been doing a lot during this morning, but striping is not noisy.
Yeah. But safest done at night, but I think they can do some of the big block segments during the day, so we'll let the contractor do that. But the intersection, I think, is what they said was going to be done at night. Love hearing the yelling from the contractor during the meeting. So we're going to go out there after this, go check it out. So we have the Powell Street project coming in with a presentation at the December meeting, I think, or was it the January meeting? We just had an email from them, from their team.
I think we'll be probably be pushing it out further to possibly to January.
Okay, so the January TSC meeting. And then following up with a council visit in February then, so just a month after that TSC visit.
Yeah.
And our 40th Street project will be going to council tomorrow for a project description item. And then following that, we are going through our environmental process through the beginning of next year. And you'll hear a lot about that tomorrow. And let's see. I think that's it for updates. Matt gave the update on the street tree study and the tree plantings. Completion early next year. You put spring here, but...
Early, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's about it. So any questions on these projects? We're here to answer.
None for me.
One, this isn't related to this, but while we're on top of paving, on Shell Mound Street, kind of under the bridge, I think, where there was that water main. Right, there's still a bunch of work. Is that related to the EB mud?
Yeah, so that was an East Bay mud water main break. They had some immediate, like, emergency work that they did there. I don't think they did their final fix there on the paving. So they did a temp fix.
Yeah. I see folks, like,
And then south of that is PG&E. They're doing a lot of work from there to the Loney Way.
Right.
And I don't think they've completed all their work yet either. They have a final pave completion. I think they had a target with Thanksgiving. I don't think they met that yet. Yeah. So we can probably give a follow-up email of their progress to you. But
I was thinking through that. I was kind of curious.
Yeah, but all not complete yet. Yeah.
And contractors are responsible for, not contractors, utilities are responsible for returning the fully paving it again.
Fully paving all that to the, actually beyond the original condition, really. So all that will go to the lane line, I think is what they're doing. And in some cases, they'll go all the way to the center line, doing half of the whole street. Yeah.
Okay. No other questions. No other comments. Public comment. Any other discussion?
No.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. That's item 6.4. Future agenda items. I see we have a pretty packed list here. I don't know if you have any other anything that's not.
I have no new items to add.
Anything else at this point. Are we meeting in December?
We do have it slated. If you guys have a conflict though, let us know. But yeah, we do have a slated. We have a few items we do want to bring to.
I was just to make sure that I had
I think it's on
December
9th.
So not a new item, but I did just want to kind of highlight with the C-Click Fix streamlining what the intent there was, because it's such a public facing program. And I can sometimes see like odd things come in that are sometimes difficult to close or resolve. When sometimes I can think of like, a one answer response that can, close the item, get it off the plates. So the streamlining aspect of it is to try to make it as imagining some type of like flow chart that makes it like straightforward to close these items out if at all possible. But I know it's very much balancing staff ability. So I just kind of wanted us to learn more about how we're tackling those, or what are we doing to try to make the program better, continuously improve it? I was hoping to know when we could talk about it. And part of the background is I do want to, we promote it on the website. And I also want to know when we can try to, when's a good target to try to promote it more to the public in some way. My tentative date for the management analysis that's been out for quite some time is sometime in January at this point. So I think there's a few outstanding items that we've gotten and we'll want to see where that would fit in, because I think the thinking, hearing more about what your intent was, the request, we'll need to do some preparation for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe it could be like a follow-up study session item, yeah. Kind of like how we had the previous one, but this one would be more focused, less on like just the overall timeline, because I think there's now a good workflow with the ticket internal systems, and this could be more like the nuts and bolts of like, you know, what are the issues that we're seeing on CClickFix, which ones do we not think belong there, which ones are appropriate. I did recently notice that there's now a statement that says, if you have code enforcement concerns about gas-powered leaf blowers, to go call the police department. And, you know, my reaction to that is, we have the system CClickFix. The code enforcement person has access to it. You have the ability to take a picture of your gas-powered leaf blower, and somebody could, you know, at a property, and I had a conversation with code enforcement, it's very onerous for them to try to run out when the gas-powered leaf blower, drop what they're doing and run out and see this gas-powered leaf blower. It's just not at all practical. So it just seems like there's some clear streamlining and synergies, at least with regard to code enforcement. We should try to leverage this system without over encumbering any staff, whether it's public works or code enforcement, but we should leverage the system. It's there. People know how to use it. I don't think we should be, my personal opinion is, I don't think we should be calling the police. So that's just an example of something that I could see relevant to this streamlining without getting into too much more discussion.
Thank you. And another important piece of information in terms of the question around scheduling it is that we just lost the person who made the presentation that got us all of the progress that we recently crowned.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for letting me. Was that
as of November 6th?
Was that the? He was not the management analyst.
No, he was our operations manager who actually got the team, you know, and organized internally around closing out these and processing them.
I see. Are we losing it to another city?
That's correct. Went to another city.
Did we add employee retention? No. No, I appreciate the information.
Sure.
Okay. So, No other new additions. 10.1 announcements and member comments.
No announcements.
Nothing on me. So with that, it is 7:08.